This is tape number one, recorded on, what, April 1st, 1976?
Interview with Margaret Adam.
I was born in a real small town, population of which was 5,000, and I was fortunate to be born into a middle-class family, which meant that I had privilege and access to culture and music and music lessons and just about anything that I wanted in terms of pursuing music. My mom was, and still is, a pianist and an organist. When she graduated from school, where she took a degree in performance, times were such that she didn't have a chance of really going into performance, so she ended up, like a lot of women in the 40s, as a piano teacher. And I grew up listening to her, working with young students, doing all that part. And also sometimes in the afternoon, I would listen to her practice with this wonderful woman named Madeline Evans, who was a violin player who's ended up being a teacher also. Both of them had, I think, done a lot of study and performance, and what they would do for their fun was to jam on Beethoven violin sonatas and beautiful things like that. In the nighttime, when my father was done with work, he would come home, and he was a publisher of the newspaper in the town, and spent his whole day writing and doing all the stuff that has to do with newspapering. And for his avocation, he was a songwriter, and he wrote show tunes, and with the idea of writing shows. He wrote one show, completed one, in 1950, just to be put on for the Red Cross, I think it was, to raise money for the Red Cross in the Korean War. And really enjoyed that, did it with his best friend, and had my mom playing on the piano, and another woman, who ended up being my piano teacher later on, also played the piano. It was kind of a homespun type of situation, but it allowed him to do the kind of creating that he wanted to do. I learned real early that the idea of writing songs was something that you did separate from your real work. And I think I got that message from my father, because what he did for serious work was to put out a newspaper and all that. What happened was, as a result of him being into show tunes, in the evening when he would come home, we would listen to show tunes. That's what would be on the radio, on the record player. And all during the day, my mom would have Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier or Mozart's something-something sonata or a lot of classical music in the daytimes, Debussy and Ravel, Rachmaninoff, a lot of piano concertos and things like that. In the nighttime, I'd listen to show tunes, Cole Porter, Gershwin, Rodgers and Hart, and that's what I grew up with. That was my background in music. And I just loved piano lessons and kept taking them as long as I was interested, and then bumped into George Gershwin, and that was the end of that. I quit taking lessons and went off playing popular music.
What age?
Oh, this was about 13. And got into the whole set of young people at that time, I think. It's probably still going on, where you go down and you buy the sheet music of the popular song, and then when you get in gatherings, you're expected to play, and what I played was Moon River and Exodus and those kinds of tunes. And I got into arranging them, because the sheet music itself was real boring. It was too simple. And so I would add things and arrange them, and it finally reached the point where I was at some gathering or other and played a song, and everyone thought it was real great, but they didn't recognize it. And so shortly thereafter, I made what I would consider a real small leap of faith and just started writing my own tunes. And that was about 1963.
How old were you then?
I was, let me see, 16 or 17, I was a junior in high school, and kept on writing for myself. I had made a decision early on in terms of my music that I would do it as an avocation, and part of that had to do with the fact that the music didn't come from my brains like my English literature or my writing did. It wasn't something that I could get a hold of and control in the same way that I could control making outlines of thoughts and putting them down on paper. It wasn't like that at all. It just came out of my spirit, and I was real clear on that, that that was different.
So you've been writing 12 years?
Yes. I started writing lyrics at the point where I had graduated from college with a degree in English and literature and writing as well, and decided I would be a teacher and explored that for a while, and was being a secretary registrar of a college somewhere and hating it. I mean, I had color-coded everything. I'd done every kind of filing you could imagine, and cross-filing, and my desk was too clean, and I was always having to sneak reading, you know, because the person that I was working for was threatened by me. So I was always having to look like I was terribly busy, and I wasn't. And I made a decision with the help of a couple of people who encouraged me that I would just take a year off and just check out music, just see what would happen if I gave all my time over to writing. And I was scared beyond reason, beyond anything I had ever felt before, terrified that if I actually did give myself over to it, knowing full well I couldn't control it and maintain the beauty of it. I mean, I knew that I could intellectualize the music and control it and force myself to write a particular way, because I'd already psyched out what kind of how you build music. I could do it all intellectually, but I didn't want to bring that to my music. I didn't want my music to have that part in it at all. And so I had been very wary about even approaching it as a full-time job or as a life's work, because I didn't want to mess it up. I didn't want to get
the pressure.
It wasn't the pressure, it was the intellectualization of something as beautiful and spontaneous as this creative urge I felt inside myself. I didn't want to mess it up with intellect. And at the same time, I had this nagging going on inside me all the time, and I, with the encouragement of some friends who said, "What is a year? I mean, you've got a monkey on your back. What is a year of your life? Take off a year of your life, Marg, that's all. And give yourself a chance to explore your music. And if at the end of that time it's just not doing what you want it to do, doesn't make you satisfied, then that's nothing compared to what it will feel like to you at age 40 or 50 to never have dealt with that and faced that muse inside yourself." So I did it. So I quit my job and I moved into the country and I started writing lyrics immediately. All the songs I'd written up to that time had been instrumental. And as soon as I quit my job and gave myself over entirely to my art...
How did you support yourself in that year?
I had saved money.
So that you could just afford to...
Absolutely.
...no pressure of living and...
Right.
You save the money with that goal in mind, or
no.
Did it just happen?
No, I just... I mean, that was a value that I'd been brought up with, and I was in a situation that I had enough money so that I could save some, you know. I've spent the first 6 months writing constantly, 2 and 3 songs a week, which is real prolific. And then I started getting guilt tripped by myself, my goal orientation. You know, you can't just write these songs forever. You got to do something with it. I was living a fairly isolated life. I had been very involved with the anti-war movement at Berkeley and environmental concerns, speaking for that and writing for those things. And I mean, Kent State kind of put me right in touch with the abyss and freaked me out, frightened me a great deal. I looked at the map and I saw all the Air Force bases and where they were, and they were talking about civil disobedience and control and how all the marvelous weapons that they had developed in Vietnam could be used for civil disorders in America. And I just, Berkeley and experiencing the CS gas and the, you know, the helicopters, all that stuff, I figured that I could do more if I got my own act together. I mean, lots and lots of people, I think, came to the same conclusion as I did, that any kind of real social change that was going to happen was going to happen in some different ways than what we had already tried. So I went into myself, and that coincided with getting out of school and going into the country and writing.
Did Lost in Inner Space come out of that?
No. Lost in Inner Space came out of feeling real strongly that I was going to go crazy. And that had everything to do with the fact that I hadn't given myself enough time, that I was performing more and more, getting more actively involved in talking about what I was doing rather than just doing it. And as the more I spoke about it and the more I analyzed it and intellectualized it, the more distance there was between the creative process and what was said about it, the analysis of the creative process and the songs. And this is pre-politics, even. I say pre-politics meaning before anyone had spoken to me about what the music was saying. I did not identify when I started writing lyrics as a feminist songwriter at all. I didn't identify as a feminist when I started writing. I looked on the women's movement, this is in 1971 or 1972, I'm not sure where exactly, but the women's movement to me at that time was filled with a group of women who weren't strong enough to make it on their own. I had no sense of my own privilege, you know, class and race, and how all those things had everything to do with what my dad did, you know, the fact that I had been able to do the kinds of things that I've been able to do, get the education, get the music lessons, all those kinds of things. I really thought everyone should be able to do that, and if they didn't, it was just because they were lazy. And when I got in touch with how ignorant that was, it changed everything. I looked at women organizing women and women organizing with women in a totally different way.
Did that happen during the year that you were taking off or after?
That it happened towards the end of when I had taken off the year. I decided to move in from the country to San Luis Obispo, where I was living outside there and moved in, and there was a consciousness-raising group that was going on there. And I had met some of the women who were in it, and they seemed like interesting people, and I didn't know anyone at all. I had totally cut myself off. I didn't listen to the radio on purpose because I wanted to see what I had to say musically, what kind of musical forms and lyrical whatevers I would say. And so I didn't listen to anything. I was very much isolated and loving it. I did a lot of reading, and it was an important period of getting a sense of who I was.
And you started writing away. I would think it would take some time to kind of shake off all those old patterns that were behind you.
Oh, yeah. For sure, I haven't shaken all of them off. I'm conditioned, as all of us are, number one in Western music, and number two in AM music, and all the stuff that I've been listening to all my life, whether or not I wanted to, you know, all the music, whether it's in elevators or whether it's on TV or the radio or whatever, all the primitive, boring music. In coming together with that consciousness-raising group, it's very interesting, there were a series of events. I got involved with the consciousness-raising group, and through at the same time, I was involved with those women in that group and getting in touch with my oppression as a woman. I was also making a decision that I had to take my music and do something with it. And I went to Los Angeles in probably, let's see, I get the dates confused, early part of 1973, I guess, and to take my music to the publishers to see if there was any interest in signing me up as a songwriter with one of the publishing houses. And at the same time, I went to a feminist conference in Los Angeles. I spent the first 5 days of the week taking my tape around to the publishers, and I spent the weekend at the conference, at which time Kate Millett got up on the stage and said, I'm going to have a music festival. Conferences are fine, but I think we should have a music festival, and I'm going to have one in May of this year, and tell your friends and any musician who wants to come, come play. It's going to be at Sacramento. And so I went there. That was like maybe a month later. I went there to find a singer to sing my music, or singers to sing my music. Yes, yes. I wanted that because I had written them. All the songs that I had written up to that point were from a woman's point of view. I had no political analysis of this, but that's what I wanted. I had written Beautiful Soul during that period, 20th Century Drama. Consequences. Those are the songs I performed most out of that period. It hadn't occurred to me to go find a man to sing them just because I was a woman and I had sung them, and I just was trying to find someone who could sing them. I didn't feel that my voice was good enough, number one. Number two, I didn't want to perform. I saw performance as Janis Joplin and Judy Garland and all the women who had lost their hearts and their lives to some unhealthy entity called performance. And